everyone, and welcome once again to Work With Purpose, a podcast about the Australian Public Service. My name's David Pembroke. Thanks for joining me. I begin today's podcast by acknowledging the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet today, the Ngunnawal people, and pay my respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging, and recognise the ongoing contribution they make to the life of this city and region. Today, a podcast with a difference. Our guests, two former secretaries from the Australian Public Service, Kerry Hartland and Glynis Beecham. This podcast was recorded as a webinar for both Proximity and Content Group, but the content was so good, we decided to turn it into a Work With Purpose episode. And the topic was, how do you build and sustain a high-performing public sector organisation post-COVID? It's a great conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Well, the pandemic has forced a new way of working for individuals, for teams, for organisations, and it's also forced change in the way we collaborate with clients and with stakeholders. It has challenged traditional structures and exposed glaring governance weaknesses at an international, national, and local level. COVID-19 has also accelerated the uptake of digital technology and brought about a greater awareness of well-being and productivity, particularly in times of crisis. So, what are the lessons that we've learned from the past couple of years, and what do we need to do to ensure that we can create and sustain high-performing organisations? What are the building blocks for improving performance and productivity, and how do we manage and sustain not just our own performance, but the performance of the people who we lead? To discuss these questions and more, I'm joined by two former Australian Federal Public Service Departmental Secretaries who are now part of the team at Proximity. Kerry Hartland is the Principal Advisor at Proximity and the Chair of their Advisory Board, and Glynis Beecham is the Principal Advisor of Proximity's Health and Industry Practices. Welcome to you both. Glynis, I might start with you. What are the biggest and most critical challenges that organisations must address as a result of the changes brought about by the pandemic?
I think the pandemic's exposed some of the changes that need to be made, particularly in larger organisations, in the public service in particular. And one of the most paramount issues to address is that uncertainty, planning for uncertainty. I think organisations have been good at planning for change. I think it now is planning for uncertainty. And that requires a lot of communication, a lot of effort by leaders, and a journey to take organisations on. I think what we've seen during the pandemic is the rate of change, the speed of decision making. And one, coming from a line agency in the Commonwealth previously, one of the things that I've really seen is problem solving can't be done in silos. And I think working across agencies and organisations and across teams is going to require ongoing discipline by leaders and organisations. And I think it's interesting, many agencies and public services have had the mantra in the past about one APS or one health and the like. And I don't think we can operate like that anymore. I don't think citizens, clients, constituents, industry really care about the organisational structures within government. They really want to know that there's outcomes are being delivered and that we, as public servants, are working together to deliver those outcomes in consultation with those that are most affected. And I think that that is going to be a big change. I think there's also, obviously, you mentioned digital and the way we work, and so there's change in how we work. And we'll get onto that a bit later, but more remote working, what does that mean for cultures of organisations, and particularly in leaders, in bringing cultures together based on values? And I think that we've heard the further you are from the centre, the harder it is to manage and lead organisations, and that cannot be done through prescriptive processes. It is absolutely based on values, and how do you entrench those values in people that you probably don't have daily contact with and are not likely to have contact with in the future? So there's using digital and engaging, and I should say engaging, not just consulting, but engaging staff is going to be a particular challenge as well. And I think one of the other things, and you mentioned focusing on people and productivity, and what we've seen through the pandemic is what makes people tick. What do you have to do to bring out the best you possibly can in their performance? And I've been delighted to find out more about people that work in my teams than probably I ever did before. You've seen people come in as robots and they're a unit there to produce particular outcomes rather than looking at the person as a whole and focusing on not just cost efficiencies and productivity but health and well-being to improve productivity for the future. So I think there are a couple of the challenges. I guess the other big organisational challenge is, I think, the move from efficiency cost drivers to resilience and sustainability for organisations and people. And I think that's what we've got to focus on.
That's not a short list.
Actually, one of the other things, though, that the pandemic showed, and particularly when the pandemic started in the health portfolio, is how soon that every portfolio was involved. Every industry stakeholder was involved, every community was involved, but just the connectedness of all of our work. And so that's why it's probably not a short list, but that's probably the underlying theme coming out of the pandemic for all of us.
And it has exposed, hasn't it, some of those capabilities that we've sort of lost, I think, over time in the public sector.
Yeah.
And through, you know, it is just an overtime thing where there's been sort of deep specialisation in areas, and I think so, you know, and I know that, you know, Glenys, you were working really specifically around some of the value chain and, you know, issues, and we found that, you know, the public service had to go out to consultants and to be able to sort of and to industry, and we're finding that there was much more depth of knowledge in things that normally the public sector would have known more about.
Yeah.
So I think that's exposed some of those issues, which then is an opportunity for the future, right?
It is. And a willingness of industry players to work together to solve problems. Yeah. I think when I was there post-retirement, looking at the supply of PPE and finding out that most gowns and masks were from Wuhan, is the absolute willingness of local companies and local organisations to work together to produce masks and gowns and the like. And I think that was a terrific thing to happen, that you can make things happen.
But when there's not a crisis, how do you make it happen? How do you sustain it?
Yes.
How do you do that?
How do you sustain that? I think it's around behaviours and expectations, and I think that's why you need to reset, in a sense, organisations. Whilst organisations, and I think, David, you spoke about the foundations, and I've got a very simple framing of those foundations around people, processes, systems, resources, governance and values. And if you get those lined up and those right, then I think you're in a good place to manage whatever's thrown at you. I think there'll be different emphasis around collaboration. So I think the collaboration work and engaging rather than consulting is going to be a big change for organisations. Less hierarchy, more focused on project work and drawing in skills rather than people in particular roles. I think there's absolutely going to be a skills-based approach rather than a roles-based approach as well. So they're just a couple of examples. Yeah.
So, Kerry, from your point of view, do you agree with Glenys that there will be a greater openness, a greater ability to engage, to bring in some of the thinking, the experience, the access to global knowledge, perhaps, that's not available, you know, immediately inside the public service?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think there's the opportunity. It's up to leaders then to take that opportunity and run with it. So I think there's the ability now to you know, rethink, to be able to reset and reform, you know. So there's lots of lessons to be learnt. And I think you're right, David, you know, that sustaining that is going to be the really tricky part of it. But in the end, that's going to be up to leaders and to be able to drive that down through organisations. You know, so many times, I'm sure, Glenys, you found the same thing, that you can't just do it from the top. You actually have to have that values piece and an understanding right throughout the organisation. Otherwise, you find that what you think is happening at the top of the organisation is not happening sort of lower down. So I think that's a lot around your communication strategies, which are, you know, really fundamental, and giving people context, you know, of what they're there to achieve and really focusing sort of on the outcomes. So I think, you know, coming off the back of, and it's hard to say whether you're coming off the back of the pandemic, right? You know, so it's ongoing. And I think that's the other thing. People need to be aware, you know, there's likely to be other strains, right? And there's likely to be, you know, that resilience factor that's needed forevermore. So Glenys's point about continuing to plan for change and for upheaval, that uncertainty is going to be a really important, I think, part of the, particularly for leaders, sort of part of their capabilities that they're going to need, you know, their skill set. So I think, though, one of the things that has happened during this pandemic, everyone has had to focus, obviously, on getting stuff through and doing the things that have to be done. That's probably to the detriment of reform across the public sector, and we know, certainly Glenys and I from different pieces of work that we've been doing, that leaders across the public sector have said, you know, we're 2-3 years behind in terms of where we wanted to be, in terms of reforming systems, in terms of building capability. So I think now's the time, you know, and there will be, at the Commonwealth level, you know, we'll have a caretaker period where people will need time to get some rest, but they will also need time to sort of rethink about what those reform agendas are and how you're going to actually put new things on the table and do that reform in your own organisations to have, you know, greater performance.
So, Glenys, it was the first point that you raised, and Kerry's gone to it again, this notion of planning for uncertainty. How do you do that when lives and when you're working in the federal public service, particularly at senior levels, it is just so busy. There is so much to do. How do you carve out the time and the mindset and the space to be able to help your organisation to manage and be better prepared for that uncertainty that you talk about?
It's a great question, and I think Kerry and I have been exposed to some commentary around what some big multinationals are doing, and they've got dedicated teams that report to the chief executive that do have scenario planning units. But I don't think the public service holds all the answers, and I think that's what the pandemic's shown. So if we're open to working with industry and stakeholders in problem solving and taking them on the journey, then I think we're halfway there, where I think in the past we've been very good at developing policy papers and cabinet submissions and the like. I think we've actually got to get out there and go through some of those scenarios. And we have had, when I was in health, we did have WHO scenarios around pandemics, influenza outbreaks and the like, but it's very much focused on health and what health was going to do, whereas I think now we've got to look at across government, across industry, and say, what if? And Kerry mentioned supply chains and the like. So supply chains were being managed just in time. Now supply chains are being managed just in case. And so I think the private sector is starting to do that. And it's interesting, I think in the public sector, if we managed in the past for contingency, it was always seen as fat, bloated. But I think now we do have to plan for that contingency and surge capacity and needing new skills in very different ways. So I think we should be doing more scenario planning, and particularly with governments and with stakeholders. That's hard to do because, as you say, it takes you off some of the transactional day-to-day things you're doing and focusing absolutely on the future. But problem solving and critical thinking, and Kerry mentioned some of the capabilities that have started to diminish in the public sector over time, not just through the pandemic, is that critical thinking, policy analysis, problem solving with others, even defining what the problem is part of the challenge. So I think there's people that want to make things happen, and I think we've got to just use that momentum, if we can, to change the way that business is done in government.
And I think there's, you know, there's an opportunity there, and I was involved in a discussion the other day with a large department that was looking at how they, with the recognition that there's so much small business in this country, you know, 90%+ you know, of our businesses are small businesses, and how do you better, I guess, corral the sort of the ability of small businesses in terms of crisis, for example, and that you have that ongoing relationship with them to be able to, you know, use them in a crisis, but also, you know, in terms of supply chain work, you know, knowing what they can provide and I think, you know, that's a hard one when you're dealing with lots of, you know, sole traders, for example, and, you know, micro businesses. Mm. But I'm really encouraged that those discussions are now starting to happen, you know. So I think it does give us that opportunity to forge different stakeholder relationships. And because we're actually now been doing a lot of work remotely, you know, there's some other mechanisms that we can use to do that. But, you know, the communication's the key. Yeah.
The other big thing that's brought to the fore is how you manage risk and what your risk appetite is. Mm. And I think many of us have been in organisations, I hope Kerry agrees, where you've gone through a tick and flick process in terms of some ISO template to manage risk. And yet now it's real. And so I think risk management, risk appetite, and what we do about it, what are our risk mitigation strategies, are real for people now at all levels. Mm. And so I think that's the other part of how to do and plan for uncertainty.
And certainly one of the key mitigation tactics, practices, processes that you can deploy to manage risk is effective communication. And Kerry just mentioned it, and you mentioned it in an earlier answer. Do you believe that the pandemic has heightened the need for more effective communication? Do you think do you have to communicate more now than you used to before? Previously, you did mention about your people and your productivity and dispersed workforces, which would tend to suggest that you do think that. But do you have to do more now than you used to have to do?
Well, from my point of view, I think you probably do. I think one of the big challenges to create a positive culture in an organisation is to instil that sense of belonging for every staff member. And how do you do that? The best way is to communicate and engage with them so they don't feel so isolated. And I think now that remote working is here to stay, and it doesn't matter where from. I think most people talk about from home, but we're probably talking about from around the world, around Australia. How do you keep them engaged? And I think digital technology and the way we do business is a great way to do that as well. But I think for leaders, understanding what makes people tick and how best to engage, you really do need to focus on the person. And from an organisational sense, is what's the impact of remote working and engaging individual on teams and team productivity? And in the past, we used to have arguments about who was going part-time, who was full-time, who was going to cover this, particularly when there were crises happening. And I think now there needs to be much more discipline and a deliberative process around how teams engage and teams work. And the best ideas come out of, you know, engaging around the table, tossing around ideas and having brainstorming sessions. And you can still do that with technology, but we shouldn't lose sight of the team productivity as well.
And Kerry, for you, the communications?
Yeah, so I would argue that it should have always been there. You know, it should have always been done well, and, you know, and you can never communicate enough. And I use that context word. I think that's really important as well. So, you know, if you've got people sort of working in a vacuum that they don't know, you know, what it is that they're trying to produce, but you give them, you know, you open up a bit more, you give them the context of why it's important and what they're doing, and why it's important that you also talk to, you know, that department over there and those people over there, that you'll get a better product. You know, I think the pandemic has just sort of has heightened that, but it should have always been sort of up front and centre. I do agree, you know, the remote side of it, again, you know, I've just been around a number of the cities where I've been talking to stakeholders with a particular issue that I've been dealing with, and they were just so pleased to be able to have face-to-face meetings. Mm-hmm. And so I got, you know, record turnouts of people, so that was fantastic. But they had also commented that they hadn't, they'd never had that sort of interaction with the public sector before, and it shouldn't have been up to me to be having, you know, that for the sort of first time. So that was, didn't matter whether it was a pandemic or not. You know, the fact that they were really eager to have it was a build-up from the pandemic, but they'd never felt that they'd had interaction in the way that they should have with the public sector. So I think there is a golden opportunity to use a different media in different ways now, you know, so, you know, whether it's I'm always of the view that you can't forge a deep relationship through remotely, that, you know, you need to do a lot more of that sort of face-to-face, but then once you've actually developed that, then it's a lot easier just to pick up the phone or have a Teams meeting or whatever. So I think I would be worried that we don't that we sacrifice all face-to-face stakeholder engagement. And there is a risk of that, I think, where governments might go, okay, you've done without your travel budgets, you don't need that. Mm. Whereas I think that those, you know, all forms of communication are going to be important again. But I do think it gives us a number of other avenues in which, you know, it's opened up opportunities for better communication.
I think leaders probably have been more visible now. I think,
yeah.
And Kerry is absolutely right. Communications in large departments, there's always been a trickle-down, misinformation, interpretation of what leaders have said, but now I think there's an opportunity for leaders to talk direct to yeah. all employees, which is...
Regularly.
And I think Kerry's right, yeah. Always it was, oh, you're not telling us this, you're not telling us that. There was a thirst for communication almost on a daily basis, and I'm sure it would have been for some during the pandemic. I mean, I think we had a number of mixed messages going out there to the citizens and the like, and who's the authoritative source of information? And that's where I think leaders can be much more visible. But I agree. I mean, I like working around the table and seeing people face to face.
And I have heard some teams that have said that they've had more interaction with their supervisors and managers than they'd ever had before. And I think that was being drilled into everyone. Well, you know, you have to keep people informed. And that, you know, so that's a good thing. But that's also... it's also become quite tiring for people. You know, I think we do have to recognise that people are really, you know, quite tired over the past, you know, couple of years. And, we just have to factor those mental health issues into sort of, you know, into our work as leaders as well.
So, Glynis, what's your view when you hear that story, the anecdote that Kerry just told us about the public response, the craving for... engagement with government, and government went and did it, and not only were they pleased through the pandemic that they needed that information, but it was a feeling that they'd never had before, or that they'd never felt like they'd been spoken to before. Is it a cultural thing? Is it a mindset thing? Does the public service think that they're doing it and they're actually not doing it? What's the problem, and how can we solve it as we strive to improve that or achieve high performance in the public sector?
In terms of communication with citizens.
Well, yeah, with citizens, yeah, exactly.
I think it is a big issue for the public service generally, and sometimes that comes from the authorising environment. So sometimes ministers and government will see it's their responsibility to convey messages to the public, and I just want you to implement and make sure nothing goes wrong, public servants, and I'll talk to the constituents. Whereas I think now, I think government obviously has been using chief health officers and medical people, army people. We've heard from emergency department specialists. They're getting out there, talking to the public. So I think now the authorising environment and the acceptance of public servants and public servants with trust, talking more directly to constituents and citizens is a good thing. Not to raise profile of public servants, but to make sure that there's an authoritative source of information and information you can trust. And we've all seen the misinformation coming around from very high levels too of within our elected politicians about vaccines and the like. So where do people go to get information? And I think public servants should be trusted to provide that impartial, authoritative source of information that people are craving for.
Kerry, that's an interesting point that Glynis raises, isn't it, around in the age of misinformation and disinformation, the public sector, the public service really does have to be the source of truth, has to be able to represent the facts, the evidence. How can they better do that? How can they achieve that? How can the public sector play a better role in being able to communicate that that credibility?
So I think that there's so I think it can be done on a micro level and sort of a macro level. So I think at the micro level it is about understanding, getting back to sort of knowing where your risk appetite is and actually working that out with your elected official. So working that out with ministers about where your parameters are. It's really important so that then you can actually instill that in your staff as well. Because I think there is, you know, where I see where there are organisations that are very risk averse, they're increasingly then, you know, turning to people like us to go, you know, okay, well, we need a review done and we want something done out there, because they're a little bit worried about, you know, how far to go. And so we can go in there and, you know, we can have a very upfront discussion, and then it's not going to come back on them. So I think it can be done, you know, at that micro level through, you know, more discussions. And I'd have to say, I think a lot more listening, you know, with stakeholders. You know, I don't think there's nearly enough of that happens. There is a lot of preaching that can be done about what can't be done, as distinct from just listening to hear what the issues are from a whole variety of stakeholders. I think at the broader level, I mean, I think it does depend a bit on the government's appetite to allow the experts to sort of speak as well. And then I think it's about the line that is there. So, again, I think it comes back to those discussions with government around the role that the public servant is playing in terms of providing information and the factual piece versus the politics and being clear about not stepping over that line. So I think those conversations are really important. And in terms of, you know, we're coming up to that election, as we've spoken about, being able to do that almost on day one with new ministers is important for leaders, to be able to have those discussions about the roles that public servants are playing, their expectations of in terms of that communication.
Has COVID changed the expectations, do you believe, between ministerial officers and the senior levels of the public service?
I think in line with actually what Glynis has said, I think it's opened up those opportunities some more. So I think there is a bit more willingness from ministers to see where there's expertise that can be leant on. And in the end, I think that's really helpful for ministers, you know. So ministers don't have to rely on everything in their heads about every bit of information, and then they can turn to the experts to be able to, you know, provide that context and that information. So I think that's open an opportunity. I think, though, there's also a risk, and there's always that risk, because if a minister doesn't like what the expert has said, then that might crawl it for, you know, the next time. But I think there are conversations that have to happen between
them. And your view, Glynis, do you think there's been a shift?
I think there has, and I think it's not just the pandemic, it's probably the floods and bushfires that started at the start of 2020. And what were people craving is someone out there from government. They didn't They didn't care whether it was an elected politician or someone from the public service. Look at us, look what's happening on the ground. And we should be doing that anyway in terms of our normal business, whether it's aged care, health, you know, how someone goes through the cancer journey and the like, is we need to understand what clients and customers and citizens are going through so we can better tailor our advice and certainly our services to meet their needs. And I think it's been a whole number of things that it has exposed, I think, a need for public servants to engage. And Kerry spoke about micro level. I think engaging and involving industry and citizens in co-design, which sounds like a buzzword, but, you know, problem solving again, should be a normal part of the way we operate. And that will instill trust, I think, in the future, rather than particularly here in Canberra at the federal level, we're seen as sitting in isolation in terms of what's actually happening on the ground. Mm.
Interesting. An earlier answer that you gave was really around that problem solving and saying that it was necessary even inside the bigger departments for everyone to work together. You know, one defence, one health, one APS. But even to take that further to solve the problems by bringing everybody else together.
Yeah.
How does that become different in this post-pandemic world? If there has been that flick where there has been that movement towards that collaboration and cooperation, but again, how do we make that continue rather than just, oh, we'll just go back to the way that we've always done it before and we'll just get back into our stove, we'll just get back into our lanes and we'll stay in our lanes because that's where traditionally we've always existed.
And I think there's a big risk of doing that. I think there's raised expectations from the people that we serve now in terms of not only just using digital in the way we do business, but quality of services, the quality of advice, getting involved in problem solving. So the pressures are coming from outside. They're coming from our own staff in terms of how we do business. So changing some of the business models within organisations is going to be pretty critical. I don't think there is going back. The costs of government through digitisation and the like are coming down, but there's raised expectations, heightened awareness of what governments can do that is going to increase pressure on services and the quality of services in the future. So I think we absolutely have to engage others in that problem solving. And I know I'm probably sounding cliched by now, but I certainly learnt the lesson through the health industry coordination group in terms of procuring PPE in March 2020, March, April, May. Mm. And it was a completely new business model, so much so that we had to get ACCC approval for industry to work together. Mm. Competitors to work together. Mm. So they're changing their business models and we have to be in sync as well.
So, Kerry, to deliver on that promise, to deliver on that future, goes to your point around capability and being able to do it. It's not as if you can just, you know, one day turn up at work and go, all of a sudden I've got all of these new great skills. So it's a different way of thinking. It's a different mindset. How do high-performing organisations go about building that within their organisations?
Yeah, well, I think it's, you know, again, I know it sounds a bit cliched, but, you know, the key to high performance in organisations is your people, right? You know, so you've got to have the right people, right skills, right place, right time, and that's easy to say and harder to do. I think there is, you know, I hear terminology around the public service at the moment about, you know, the Hunger Games, you know, type approach to finding staff as people are really, you know, looking for those key staff members and, you know, upping the ante in terms of sort of, in some cases it will be, you know, over promoting people because you need them there, and so there's this bidding war that's happening. And so I think that's a bit of a risk, as we know that, you know, the supply is not meeting the demand. So I think that organisations more than ever are going to need to go back to sort of what are the capabilities that they need, you know. And, you know, I'd love to be able to point to an organisation that does this well across the public sector. I think we all always have grappled with it, looking at what our future needs were in organisations and then doing the development of people in the way that we need to. So I think I just think it's going to be a crucial aspect. You know, I know there's a lot of work that has been going through the Public Service Commission in terms of the academies and in terms of looking at the structures. What's the word I'm looking for? The pay structures,
the hierarchy, levels,
and I think, you know, that's, I don't know where that's heading, but I think that that's going to be really crucial. So I think having a, looking at this in a sort of different way, and really looking at what the needs are of organisations going forward, and that collaboration, communication, I think that that resilience piece is probably something we're going to see as a key sort of criteria more than ever before, and that ability to be, you know, strategically sort of looking ahead. So I think there's, you know, the key is finding the right people, getting the right people. There's going to be that shortage, I think, for some time to come. So I think that's going to mean that that the graduate pool's going to be really, really critical, and training up your graduate pool. I think this is the worst time possible to reduce that. And sometimes there's a tendency when budgets are tight to do that. I think that would be a real mistake. And then at the other end, I think it's really looking at that leadership capability in the organisations, you know. So how do you get those leaders, and how do you train those leaders that can step up in this continuous sort of process of change and uncertainty?
And Glenys, your advice in terms of, you know, it's the dreaded word, isn't it, skills. Yeah. Every organisation, public sector, private sector, every time you, you know, open up the financial review, there's another story about we don't have enough people, and how do we solve the skills shortage?
And that's why there's been a lot of outsourcing too. So there's been a whammy of a cap on staff, on public servants, but also an increased demand in terms of skills and capability. I think Kerry's right. We do have to invest in capability. And what we've done in the past is invested in thinking about a particular role and invested skills and capability around a particular role, whereas I think now it's more that critical thinking, showing the initiative, being innovative. I mean, how do you judge that? Entrepreneurship is probably not a skill we would have been looking for many years ago in the public service, but I think entrepreneurship, taking the initiative, problem solving, and obviously the normal leadership skills, because that's how you influence and mobilise others to perform well too. I think there's a great opportunity to break down the hierarchy. I think being leaders in organisations, information is sanitised by the time you get it as a leader. You do want to engage, like ministers want to engage, with people who know about the subject matter. So I think we'll see more of a mix of specialist expertise and knowledge as well as the generalists, whereas I think we were probably leaning towards quite a few years ago having many more generalists in the public sector, whereas I think there's going to be a real mix now.
But it's not something that you can turn around overnight, is it?
No, but you can work with research institutions, 40 universities we've got. What are we doing in terms of secondments and partnerships with universities? We've got a great source of expertise there as well.
But I think you're right. I mean, it's not, there's not a short-term fix to the capability uplift that's needed. I think it does take a lot of strategic planning and has to be sort of front and centre across the public sector and look at it as a whole of what's needed. And that collaborative piece, I'd add to sort of your piece too, you know, that relationship building is just critical. And without that relationship building piece, you're not going to get that collaboration and sustain the aspects you were talking about earlier, David, about, you know, how do you maintain that sort of task force feel in terms of what you're doing to the everyday in the public sector.
Now, I do want to go back to probably if it's not the most important thing, it's pretty close to it, and that's people. You both expressed in earlier answers just the importance of getting the people right. But managing people in these continuing challenges, because just before we turned the lights and cameras on here today, we were all discussing COVID cases that we all knew about, you know, that were back. What's your advice again in these future high-performing organisations, these dispersed, distributed workforces around the place? What do people need to do to get that bit right, to make sure that they can keep people connected, they can keep them motivated, they can keep them productive, and they can keep them safe?
Well, put people front and centre, you know. I think we have learned a lot through the pandemic about issues around mental health, about that people can't be on all the time, you know, that they and I think that humanity that's been brought through sort of remote working has actually been really helpful in that. The fact that you see people's kids and you see, you know, the cat climbing on the table, and you know in some ways it's more intrusive, and you've got to be a little careful of that because people are protective of, you know, their private life for good reason. But it has brought that sort of sense of, oh, actually they're real people and they've got other things going on in their life. And I think that's a really good thing and an opportunity, you know, for leaders to sort of build on that. But I do think, it's been, you know, it's a tough number of years for people, you know, and I do a lot of mentoring and coaching with people, and they're really tired because they're actually, you know, leaders that are trying to, you know, sustain that high performance of individuals. So I think we have to, you know, learn about being, you know, a bit kind to each other and understanding, you know, that it has been a tough time, and seeing the signs from people that are actually not sort of coping and using the services sort of around us, which I know all sounds, you know, a bit soft, but you know, if you want high performance, then you actually have to take care of your people.
Yeah, and I think there's a bit of self-responsibility too here.
Yeah, sure.
Like WHS, I mean, everyone should be looking after their own physical and mental health and well-being. And I think there's been a misalignment of expectations in the past around performance, and we haven't focused on, well, okay, what's going to make you be the best you possibly can? And I think the alignment now, and I think there's more onus on leaders and supervisors to be very clear about those expectations and agree what can and can't be done with individuals and teams. So I think it's not being soft or sacrificing productivity, because we all want high performance, we all want productivity, and how are we going to do that together? But I think that focus on physical as well as mental well-being is particularly important. And I look at people who do suffer from anxiety and the like, and people are going through stressful situations. So stress sometimes is a normal part of life, and it's how we manage it. And are we as managers giving the strategies and tools for people to work through those crises as well? And I think that's where I think leaders have got to be very conscious of what productivity means and what duty of care we have to make that happen.
And I think that word expectation is a really, really important piece. I know a few times in different organisations that a cohort of people who have been, you know, aspiring to next levels have thought that, you know, the organisation wanted one thing from them, and you sit down and you work through and say, actually, no, this is what we need. You know, it goes back to the skills piece you were asking about. Here is the expectation we have of people at the EL2 level. This is what we expect you to do. And any time I've done that, people have been surprised about what they thought that I wanted from them and what my expectation of them was. So I think aligning that is really important, and that goes through in terms of how they're working, goes through in terms of that relationship building, goes through to, you know, their expectations of not being, you know, at their desk or virtual desks 24/7.
Even behavioural expectations. What are the behaviours you expect? What are the values? Mm. What's the culture you want to instil? And I think every employee needs to understand that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, a final question then. We've been talking about high-performance organisations dealing with these dramatic, substantial changes that have taken place and are continuing. But if I was to offer you the optimism scale, 1 to 10, in terms of where we sit at the moment, where would you land in terms of this bright future that you've described, and how ready the APS and organisations inside the APS are ready to move to that nirvana, the enlightened future that you've described?
I mean, if that's sort of looking across it as an amorphous sort of block here, and I think that it's you know...
And it's not easy. Like, all of this stuff, like, rolled together, it's massively complex.
So I think there's an opportunity there and to be able to take all of the things that we've learned over the last couple of years. And so I'd be really positive about what that opportunity is there, and sort of, you know, put it further at that, probably at that sort of seven-ish, though, you know, we've learned a whole lot of things, and we've got that opportunity. We've got a springboard because of a whole lot of things that we've learned and lessons learned. Whether people will actually take that and run with it, I think, is a different story.
I think there's the mindset's there. Absolutely. You'd probably put it on the very positive side, but are all the tools and the processes and what I said about the fundamentals of managing organisations there? And that's what's going to constrain the pace of change within organisations. So they may not have all the systems in place. They may not have all their performance agreements in place. They may not have redesigned their business models. So that's where I think I've come back to a seven in terms of implementing the mindset that I think is there from the leaders.
Yeah. I think that capability issue is the big one, that if that isn't sort of addressed and there's a reliance on sort of a non-existent sort of work workers there, then I think that's a problem. So that's probably the thing that I would worry about most for the sector.
All right, we could go on. I have quite a few more questions that I could ask to Kerry Hartland and to Glenys Beacham, but I will stop it there. Thank you so much for coming along today to listen to us, and thanks to Glenys and thanks to Kerry. I hope you've enjoyed today's discussion, and we'll see you again sometime in the future. So there you have it, my conversation with Kerry Hartland and Glenys Beacham, and a big thanks to Proximity and the team at Content Group for putting that webinar, which was now a podcast, together. A big thanks, as always, to our friends at IPA and the Australian Public Service Commission for their ongoing support for Work with Purpose. It really does help us to raise the profile and improve the awareness and understanding of the important work of the people of the Australian Public Service. A big thanks to the team at Content Group for putting it all together. And they have been busy. They have also now launched another podcast. To go along with GovComs and Work with Purpose, there is now the Gradcast, the third of the GovComs podcast network podcasts. And the Gradcast is, as it sounds, it is by Australian Public Service graduates for APS Public Service graduates. So by APS grads for APS grads. It's a fantastic, innovative new program which really helps to bring the perspective of grads to life and the topics and information that they are interested in. So if you know anyone who's a grad, please encourage them to their favourite podcast app where they can download the episode. And please, if you do see the social media promotion, pass it on. Thanks again to each and every one of you, our loyal audience. We'll be back at the same time in 2 weeks with another episode of Work with Purpose. But for the moment, it's bye for now.
Work with Purpose is a production of Content Group in partnership with the Institute of Public Administration Australia and with the support of the Australian Public Service Commission.